almost as if a new ocean has been discovered at the top of the globe.
Senator Lisa Murkowski makes the case for an Arctic port. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, March 2nd. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Republicans in Alaska talk about who they voted for and why.
He'll keep the values that we cherish here in Alaska. This is a conservative state, and I think the majority of people here in Alaska do support Cruz.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Alaska Community Action on Toxics believes future generations have the right to clean water, clean air, and toxic-free food. Learn more by visiting akaction.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Community Action on Toxics.
When President Obama was in Alaska last year, he said he wanted to advance plans for a deepwater port in the Alaskan Arctic, possibly in Nome. Today, Senator Lisa Murkowski followed up on that with the head of the Army Corps of Engineers.
Given the president's support for this, why have we not included construction funding going forward in this next fiscal year?
The Assistant Army Secretary for the Corps, Jo Ellen Darcy, says her agency and the state of Alaska put the port feasibility study on hold last fall. That was shortly after Shell announced its halt of oil exploration in the Chukchi Sea. But Darcy says the Corps will take another look at the Arctic port idea.
We are now going to look at further a scoping of that study because it was limited to just some economics involving oil and gas. But there are other things that we think are more that can be included in this. For instance, that the Port of Nome may be considered a port of national significance, in addition to the fact that it could possibly house the Coast Guard's icebreaker in the future.
Murkowski says she was surprised the whole study was based on one company's project. The senator says the region is opening to lots of activities other than oil and gas.
It's almost as if a new ocean has been discovered at the top of the globe. And so how are we preparing for that? You can't really be in the game. You can't be that Arctic participant unless we have that system of ports.
The exchange took place at an Appropriations Committee hearing to review the president's budget. The budget includes $150 million for planning and design of a new icebreaker. Alaska's Republicans have chosen Texas Senator Ted Cruz as their presidential candidate, bucking the trend on a night when Donald Trump took seven states. Cruz received more than 36% of the vote, with Donald Trump taking about 34%. And as Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes and Rachel Waldholtz report, more surprising than the results was the record-breaking turnout.
With nearly 22,000 votes cast, the turnout for the Alaska GOP's presidential preference poll exceeded the previous record set in 2012 by more than 50%. Several polling stations actually ran out of ballots, according to officials. Alaska Republican Party Chairman Peter Goldberg says enthusiasm among party members in the state is partially due to dissatisfaction with the Obama administration.
We're tired of the federal overreach. We're tired of the disdain that Barack Obama has had for the military.
Goldberg also thinks Cruz's visit to Alaska to help Senator Dan Sullivan's 2014 campaign may have helped him do well. Asked whether Sarah Palin's January endorsement may have given Trump's popularity a boost, Goldberg says nope.
If anything, it might have brought it down in Alaska.
What the numbers show is basically a dead heat between Cruz and Trump. Their totals are separated by just over 600 votes. Trump had an edge in smaller rural towns like Barrow, Nome, and communities across Southeast, as well as some parts of South and Midtown Anchorage. Cruz had the lead in conservative railbelt strongholds like the Kenai Peninsula, Matsu Valley, and Fairbanks. Republican consultant Cale Green says that both candidates are tapping into sentiments among conservative voters last plied by former U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller.
I think there's that large underpinning of society that says we're fed up with some of the political systems and things that we're being fed. I think Jeb Bush dropping out of the race so early was proof of that.
Who'd you vote for?
Kasich.
There, Green was in the minority. The Ohio governor received just 4% of Tuesday's vote. Similarly, former neurosurgeon Ben Carson got around 11% of the total vote, although he did win the Bethel district, receiving 17 of the 41 votes cast. So the question is, what was really on voters' minds as they were waiting at the polls?
By 4 p.m. Tuesday, the line snaked out the door of the polling station at the First Christian Church on Latouche Street in Anchorage, and there was a traffic jam in the parking lot. Voter Lauren Larson said she was looking for a true conservative.
Up until this morning, I thought I was going to be voting for Donald Trump, but he has a history of being a liberal and not being pro-life.
And so she voted for Ted Cruz. Cruz supporter Rod Wemberly said his top priority was also a candidate with consistent conservative values, which he defined this way.
Bill of Rights, Second Amendment, secure the borders, good defense, good military, strong military. He'll keep the values that we cherish here in Alaska. This is a conservative state, and I think the majority of people here in Alaska do support Cruz.
In the end, of course, that turned out to be true. But on Tuesday afternoon, in this particular line, the passion, both for and against, was with a different candidate.
It's time to make America great again. Donald Trump.
31-year-old John Creer III showed up to vote with his father, John Creer II.
Who are you voting for, Pop?
Trump, naturally, yeah. He's the only one that's self-funding. He's going to get us a border, which is important. If you want a country, you got to have a border. Just the way it is. So
many Trump supporters agreed. They said their top issues were immigration and the economy. And they liked the idea that the New York billionaire can't be bought. But more than that, they said Trump is bringing up issues other politicians won't touch. Carl Lorbs is 63 and retired from the military.
What Trump has done is declare war on political correctness. Everything, all the bad stuff that they say about him, it just rolls off his back. His poll numbers can, you know, jump up every time he is criticized. So that's what we need, someone who will break the back of political correctness once and for all.
Katie Neer had a different perspective.
I came out to not vote for Donald Trump, let me put it that way.
And why is that?
Do I have to tell you? Seriously?
Well, as you are in the minority of the folks I've spoken to.
I believe I am, which is really sad, which means maybe in November I will no longer be a Republican after my whole life. So we'll see.
Not that she thinks the other party is doing any better.
I won't be voting Democrat either. I might be writing in Mickey Mouse because, you know what, that's a pretty good choice right now.
Neer wasn't thrilled with any of the Republican candidates. Standing in line minutes from voting, she still hadn't made up her mind. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
And I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska's 28 delegates will be divided proportionally among all candidates that received more than 13% of Tuesday's vote. That means Ted Cruz will get 12 votes, Donald Trump 11, and Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who took 15% statewide, will receive 5. Alaska Democrats have not picked a presidential candidate yet. They hold their caucus on March 26th. Two Democratic state legislators are proposing a state bank. Fairbanks Representative Scott Kawasaki and Anchorage Representative Chris Tuck say House Bill 364 would help fill state coffers and aid small business. KUAC's Robert Hannon reports.
Representative Scott Kawasaki says he and Representative Chris Tuck modeled their bill on North Dakota's bank, the only state bank in the nation. Kawasaki says it's been in operation for almost a century. The idea is for the bank to make loans to Alaskans who want to start a business but haven't been able to secure loans with regular banks.
Folks who want to invest in the state or run a business in the state often find it difficult to access capital from the big national bank systems.
Kawasaki says profits from the bank would be deposited into the general fund annually, with the legislature voting to reinvest the money into the bank. So the bank would make money for the state, help the Alaskan economy, he says, and protect fledgling businesses from market swings in the commercial sector.
We're not tied in with markets. We're tied in with the development of a community. So as more small businesses thrive and are able to take advantage of this particular process through the state bank, that is what grows the bank.
HB 364 was introduced last week and has been referred to the House Labor and Commerce and Finance Committees. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The Moody's credit rating agency has downgraded Alaska's credit rating, affecting more than $744 million of outstanding general obligation bond debt. Citing heightened volatility in the state's revenues and an unprecedented imbalance caused by the state's reliance on oil prices, the ratings agency assigned a drop in Alaska from AAA to an AA1. According to the agency's credit opinion, even if the state cuts spending significantly, it cannot keep pace with falling oil prices. Absent changes in the way the state spends, Moody's estimates that Alaska will run out of budget reserves by 2019. The agency expects crude oil prices to remain below $50 a barrel through 2019. In an emailed statement, Governor Bill Walker says the news is disappointing, but he is confident the state can improve its fiscal outlook. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, parents in Anchorage play the school lottery.
There's a lot of pressure to get your kid into the right school, and you want them to go to the right school. And I mean, I think our neighborhood school is really good too.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Love Alaska's fish? Consider supporting healthy fisheries and the Alaska Marine Conservation Council when filing for the 2016 PFD through the Pick, Click, Give program. This message sponsored by the AMCC.
The lack of snow in Anchorage is forcing the Iditarod to shorten the ceremonial start this weekend. The Iditarod Trail Committee said in a news release today that the route will be reduced from 3 miles from its normal 11 miles on city streets and trails. Persistent warm temperatures over the last few weeks have melted the stockpiles the city tried to set aside for Saturday's event. The Alaska Railroad is bringing 7 freight cars filled with snow hundreds of miles from Fairbanks to ensure there's enough of it on the streets. The warm winter has extended far north of Anchorage as well. The spring season for bearded seals or ugruk has come nearly 2 months early for some hunters in western Alaska. As KNOM's Emily Schwing reports for our Where is Winter series, warm weather makes the hunt a little easier, but locals are concerned about precarious sea ice and unpredictable weather.
The village of Wales sits out on a point along the Bering Strait coast, midway between Kotzebue Sound and Norton Sound.
We live right on a bottleneck of, you know, the strait.
That's seal hunter Clyde Oxarock. He says hunters in Wales are already gearing up for their spring ugruk hunt, which usually doesn't start until April.
Some of the hunters there are saying we got to get ready now because our leads are opening up. And when they open up, we're hungry for that fresh meat and the fresh oil, you know, and it's coming earlier every year.
My name is Ben Paena. I'm a King Island descendant. My dad was born and raised for a little while on King Island and brought me up doing all the ocean hunting, marine mammal hunting, and that's kind of what I do now every year.
Paena lives in Nome. He hunts seal and walrus.
I think right now, if I were to go seal hunting, I'd try to get up somewhere high and look out on the ice and try to find some leads. And then you'd go load up your snow machine and little rowboat or whatever kind of boat you're going to retrieve the seals with and try to find your way to that lead. And then you just kind of hang out at the edge of the ice there until some seals swim by. And hopefully you'll see one and shoot one and be able to retrieve it in time.
Seal hunting can happen year-round, and there's many species. Hunters usually wait until April to hunt ugruk, but the weather has been unseasonably warm this February. As Paena stands along the coast in downtown Nome, he looks out over the sea ice.
Yeah, I see a lot of jumbled up, not very good ice for traveling.
Only a few days ago, steam rose from a large swath of open water, but a north wind blew big chunks of ice back up against the coast. So today, the bumpy, blocky edges peek out from wind-blown snow that seems to stretch for miles. Paena says there's another problem with this ice.
Not very thick ice out there for the seals to be denning in, because they should be having their pups, I imagine, March and April too, and I'm not a seal, but I would imagine they would prefer some thicker ice and more snow to cover so they can have a nice safe den for their pups.
The story of this year's sea ice up and down Alaska's northwest coast is, well, jumbled.
So it's a complicated picture.
Becky Heim leads the sea ice program for the National Weather Service in Alaska. There's no shore fast ice at Unalakleet to the south or up in Kivalina to the north this year. Residents all along the coast have posted photos and videos of thin ice and open water on social media sites all winter. Heim blames offshore winds.
That have continued to blow the thickest ice that keeps refreezing out into the deeper waters offshore. And what it's doing is it's leaving very thin new ice near shore. So that's why there's more leads and more thinner ice and access to the water.
Heim says it's not rare for wind and sea ice to interact this way. But Clyde Oxerock says in recent years, not only is the ice less reliable, but so is the weather.
We can't predict the weather. We're not going to go 60, 80 miles, no, even 30, 40 miles anymore, which we used to do. Because we knew the weather would hold, you know. Now we can't predict that anymore. So that being said, we have to harvest what's there when it's there, when we have the opportunity to go out there and get it.
Otherwise, says Oxerock, they could miss out on the ugruk harvest entirely. Dennis Davis of Shishmaref has also seen the weather become more unreliable in the winter.
Well, you know, like when I was growing up with my grandpa in Kotzebue, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, with dog teams and stuff like that, you had to know how to, you know, at least read the weather or wonder what it's going to do. Nowadays, it's just, it's either hit or miss. You never know what's going to happen.
People like Davis understand that the Arctic is always changing. But what's unclear is how best to adapt to the increasing uncertainty of what that change means for the sea ice, the weather, and a subsistence lifestyle. For KNOM, I'm Emily Schwing in Nome.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
Alaska's tobacco quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
It's school lottery time in Anchorage. That means parents who may want to opt out of their neighborhood school are considering optional and charter school programs across the district. But at least one neighborhood school principal says charter schools and neighborhood schools aren't necessarily so different. Alaska Public Media's urban affairs reporter Ann Hillman joined a couple of school tours last month to learn about the options.
Last year was really stressful for Sarah Lopez.
There's a lot of pressure to get your kid into the right school, and you want them to go to the right school. And I mean, I think our neighborhood school is really good too. And just, you know, all of my friends that have kids the same age, they were like, are you doing this tour? Are you doing this? Are you going here? So it was a lot to take in at one time.
Lopez's neighborhood school is Lake Hood. But she and her husband, Frankie, decided they liked Aquarian Charter School because it offers creativity, individualized teaching, and quarterly exploration days with themes like Star Wars and CSI. They reconfirmed their decision when they joined a dozen other parents during a school tour last month.
They're only little for so long. And why not let them do the things like the explorations, like the Jedi exploration and the Star Wars stuff, throwing airplanes in the hallway and... you know,
have Princess Leia walk right past you in the hallway, right? You know?
They decided to play the lottery. Last year, families filed more than 5,600 applications for students from all grades to go to charter schools, optional programs, or get zone exemptions. The Lopez's didn't make it into any alternative options for kindergarten, but their older son is first on the waiting list for next year's first grade class at Aquarian. 150 other kids are trying an Aquarian too, in part because test scores there and at other optional programs are consistently higher than for the district as a whole. But not all families can compete for spots at the school. Charter schools don't provide any transportation, so parents have to be able to get their kids there every day. As a result, charter schools have far fewer students who are considered economically disadvantaged. They also have fewer students of color. Airport Heights Elementary School principal Mike Webb says the charter schools are drawing kids away from his neighborhood school. About 40% of the students in his boundary area transferred out this school year.
The parents in our neighborhood very often are looking for charter schools to go to if they have the mobility to go to them. And my response to those parents was, I get that. You're looking at what's best for your kids, but why are you not knocking on the door and saying, hey, make this a better school, make it fit to what the needs of my kids are.
On a recent Tuesday, Webb takes me on a private tour because no parents showed up for the Visit Our Schools event. We walk down the halls and glance into the classrooms through new windows.
So really the whole idea that everybody's learning and that's what this place is for becomes more visible when you have windows in the walls, so it's kind of cool.
The renovation also creates new spaces for collaboration. Webb says he and his staff have restructured the school week so teachers can work together more and students can try new types of lessons. It's a weekly, hour-long version of Aquarian's quarterly exploration box. Webb says they're trying to engage students beyond the basics, just like at charter schools, so kids can see different types of careers and hobbies. The school's also trying to engage more parents. They're offering translators during community conversations because many of the parents don't speak English as a first language. And they're dropping fees for joining the PTA.
These parents are very invested in their children and want what's best for them. I think part of the challenge is that because of the language barriers and in some cases the cultural barriers, they're just not sure how to do that. And navigating a complex educational system as we have is daunting to many of our parents.
Test scores at Airport Heights are low compared to other schools. Parents don't volunteer as many hours. But Webb says he's trying to change that by learning from other schools and leveraging what his neighborhood can offer.
And one thing that we have here that a lot of those schools don't have is that level of diversity here is huge. And taking the strength of that and really highlighting that in what we do is both a challenge but can be really a cornerstone of a great school, especially given our global economy and all the things that are going on in the world.
But Webb says it will take innovation and parent buy-in. The same things that help make Aquarian successful. The Anchorage School District Lottery is open until March 24th. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Tired of seeing families and children harmed from alcohol and drug use, a group from Queethluck organized a march for sobriety through the streets of their community last week, leading with a sign saying, "Enough is enough." New voices spread their message through the village. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur was there and has this story.
A crowd is gathering in front of the Queethluck post office. Students, parents, teachers, IRA members, state troopers, VPSOs, AVCP representatives, and police officers from Queethluck, Akiak, and Akiachuk. They all stand outside. Many hold signs, some shed coats in the sun. Then, one teenager steps above the crowd.
Me and my fellow student are showing that a small group can also make a change in the world and to help the ones who don't have a voice, that they are not alone and that there is always someone there to show them that they can have a good life.
Genesee Salafi is a senior at the Queethluck School and is student council president. She and her friend Nelson organized the walk.
Because I've heard too many times from my peers and hearing about it that, oh, this kid got hurt last night from their drinking parents. Oh, this student came to school stoned and had to leave the school. Oh, he won't ever get a good education. She won't either. So this is just one big step to starting a change in the village.
Queethluck Assistant Principal Natalie Mikesell is providing support. She says drugs, alcohol, domestic violence, and sexual assault all of it is an ongoing conversation at the school. Today, Mike Sell says the teachers talked with the students about what they were marching for and what exactly alcohol and drugs are.
We talked a lot about what are some of the harmful effects of those, and a lot of the kids opened up about how it makes them feel unsafe when they see those things going on in the community.
To help have that conversation, Mike Sell says many of the teachers made signs with their students to carry during the march. What does your sign say?
Let's say no. And on this one it says, no more drugs and alcohol.
We're stopping drugs and alcohol.
Stay sober and be happy.
No more spice.
Sober parents have happy kids.
Sober.
Why is that important?
Because kids can get scared when they're drinking. Some people might get scared.
Not being scared and feeling safe. Assistant Principal Mike Sell says that's a basic need for students to be able to learn in school. She says it's similar to clothing and food.
A student needs to feel those things are being met before they can really learn. And so when those things are absent in the home because of alcohol abuse or drug use, the student will struggle.
Max Olick is Queeflick's VPSO, or Village Public Safety Officer. He says much of the domestic violence and death in the Delta is substance related, and the kids, he says, have seen too much of it.
They're tired of it. Enough is enough, they say. And we need to listen to them. They're our future generation's leaders.
After a half hour of walking, the group stops outside the community washateria. And like in the beginning, the march's leader, Genesee Salafi, climbs the building stairs and addresses the crowd.
Yes, we walked a while, and I am sure your legs are tired now. But from showing up, we've shown what a village and working together could do to solve a problem. Thank you for all your support.
Yay! In Queeflick, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Zachariah Hughes, Rachel Waldholz, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Emily Schwing in Nome, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Queeflick. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by GCI, an Alaska-born and raised company connecting Alaskans from the Aleutian to the Arctic, from the North Slope to Southeast, and to the rest of the world. With more than 2,000 employees statewide, a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, file your 2016 PFD application today. 2, receive a confirmation of filing. And 3, sign electronically with your secure My Alaska account. Visit pfd.alaska.gov for more information. And remember, the deedline to apply is Thursday, March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.